And welcome back to Coast AM. We're going to have open lines for you in just a moment. But first, if you go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, take a look at the highlight reel. You'll see the story about Comet Ison. Initially, scientists thought that the comet disintegrated after its encounter with the sun earlier today. Now, some astronomers believe that there are some remnants of the comet that they might have survived. Richard C. Hoagland has sent us a couple images that we've got posted at coasttocoastam.com. And so let's get an update from Richard on this. So has it or has it not survived, Richard?
It survived. As Mark Twain used to say, rumors of my death seem to have been greatly exaggerated.
Now, the tail seems to be gone.
Well, it's reforming. Look, I said last night there was something really, really, really weird strange about this thing.
Yep.
And I sent you a few hours ago. In fact, I had thought this was the weekend. This feels like, you know, Thanksgiving night.
It does. It does feel like
you were on. I mean, I did not remember.
I'm always on holiday.
So I just sent it to you as an FYI.
Aha.
And then suddenly I get this email. Would you like to do an update? Oh, my God, it's only Thursday. Yeah, okay. look, this is a bizarre developing story. If you read some of the traffic on the International ISON Network, which is a group of scientists, astronomers, amateur astronomers all over the world linked by the Internet, where will we be without the Internet, who have been twittering back and forth all day about not seeing this thing for a few hours as it passed closest to the sun, the screaming and wailing and gnashing of teeth that ISON had died will go down in the history books. And then a few hours later, as the solar spacecraft continued taking images, remember, this thing is so close to the sun now, nobody on the ground can see it. The only observers are NASA and other space program spacecraft looking at the sun from orbit or solar orbit or Earth orbit or wherever. So there are a flotilla, maybe a half a dozen, of these spacecraft that have been sending back images all day. And as soon as the computers process them, they would pop them up on the official, you know, various space agency websites. And they'd be eagerly downloaded by all these people looking and twittering back and forth and making comments. And it is an absolute riot. I mean, it would deserve its own reality show because everybody is wailing and, oh, it's died and, oh, why? And, I mean, it's like it's really out there. Then suddenly
bang,
have a few folks say, well, wait a minute. If it's died, what's that thing coming out the other side of the occultation disk? And what was really bizarre, George, and this, of course, they don't understand and they can't explain, and I'll be interested to hear their explanations when they get their act together politically. There are a series of spacecraft. Some of them we know, like SOHO and STEREO, which are two spacecraft that are, you know, several degrees apart in orbit that give us stereo images of solar activity. And then there's a spacecraft called SDO, which is a NASA spacecraft, which stands for Solar Dynamics Observatory. And on the SOHO images, we saw this thing go in toward the sun. Gorgeous imagery that Lex has posted. And then there's this disk that hides the sun, like an artificial eclipse, so the camera isn't burned out.
Right.
You can see things, faint things next to the, I mean, look, we're trying to look at things next to a star.
That's right.
From 93 million miles away, right? So they got this occulting disk, and the comet disappears behind it, so no one knows what it can see. Well, there's one set of spacecraft, or one set of instruments on a spacecraft, on SDO, that in that roughly 3 or 4 hour period when it was going to pass closest to the sun, perihelion was at 1:44 p.m., remember, as I said last night, this observatory was supposed to be able to see all the really cool things that were expected to happen as this thing zipped along at almost 300 miles per second, you know, less than half a million miles above the surface of the sun, and was heated to more than 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit. I mean, those temperatures, everything boils. Nothing, you know, so depending upon how big this thing is, you can imagine it boiling furiously into a vacuum, creating a huge pyrotechnic display. And to be visible on this spacecraft's camera of all the spacecraft that are up there looking, and they saw nothing. They've been repeating the loops all afternoon, and at the time it's supposed to enter the field view of the camera, nothing.
Nothing.
An hour later, nothing. Perihelion, nothing. I mean nothing, George. Absolutely nothing on the images except the sun looking like it normally does in these incredibly cool cameras.
Huh.
So you've got some spacecraft seeing it and other spacecraft not seeing anything.
What does that mean?
I haven't a clue. I mean, I could give you a really far out scenario, a speculation.
From you? No.
Nah. But you wouldn't buy it, and neither would everybody who's listening.
Well, let's hear it.
Suppose this damn thing ain't a comet, like I said last night.
As you said last night.
Suppose it's actually a device designed either automatically or by robotic control or remote control or whatever to release gases and dust at certain times to mimic a comet. And for whatever reason, they just turned the damn thing off at perihelion so that it died.
Well, let's take a look at all the information. Just go to our website. Look at the images that Richard has sent us. I don't know if I won my bet with Stephen Cates or not yet, whether it disintegrated totally or partially or who knows what this might be. Richard, thanks for the update. Have yourself a great weekend. I will be back in a moment with Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, our Thanksgiving night program here. I'm George Norrie. I'm glad that the holiday traffic got a little better this day from those people who had a nightmare over the past couple days before that. But it's going to get a little warmer and then probably a little colder a little bit later on. I'm going to be heading toward Los Angeles tomorrow for about a week before coming right back to St. Louis for Christmas. But we've got open lines for you now tonight for the next couple hours. Let's go to our buddy Mike in Livermore, California. I haven't heard from you in a while. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing great, George. Of course, kind of a tradition, Thanksgiving night, got to call in and, you know, wish you and Tommy and the rest of the gang happy Thanksgiving. Did you get some turkey today?
Oh, of course I did. I did some cooking for about 20 people. Who came over. One of the things I do, Mike, in St. Louis is a lot of people who don't have family. With my family, we invite them over. So we had a pretty packed house. And I'm the turkey maker and the cooker. And then my daughters all contribute with the side stuff. And we had a good time. And then, of course, I had to get everybody shoved out
because
I had to get rolling for the show. And, of course, my Lions won today.
Yes, and my Raiders lost.
Oh,
they were doing pretty good. I was telling Tommy, if I could just go back the rest of the season and eliminate the second half of every game, we'd probably be in first place.
Well, if the Lions had won their past two games up until the one today, they'd be sitting great. But I don't know. That's football,
oh,
Michael.
Yeah. Well, that's good for your Lions. I just want to put out there, Ed, that Tom, our good buddy Dan Dillman from the Historic Bell Theater is running It's a Wonderful Life on Saturday night.
Oh, you're kidding.
Kind of a yearly tradition.
That is great. I love that movie. One of my favorites.
Oh, you haven't lived till you've seen it on the big screen. I've watched it. My wife and I used to do it as a tradition every year for Christmas Eve. And we kind of fell off of that, and now we've made a tradition of going to the Bell Theater. And the wonderful thing is, like a couple of years ago, it lands on my wedding anniversary.
How about that? I will always remember that movie, Mike. My mother, when I was a little boy, sat me down. We watched it on television together. She said, I'm going to let you stay up late for this one. Because this is a movie you'll never forget. And she was right. I mean, every year I'll look at it on DVD now, which I have, if it's not on cable or some other venue. But I will never forget it. And the message behind it, of course, with you know, how everybody does have a part of somebody's life is so important. One of the greatest movies. It was not a box office hit, though. Did you know that?
Oh, no, it never was. And I mean, it bombed. It didn't really until years later, 20, 30 years later, became a hit for Christmas. And I just love it. I mean, like you said, the message is so wonderful. It's that everybody matters. You touch so many lives. And it feeds into your show, and that's where you should be grateful for every moment of your life, for waking up every morning, for seeing God's creation in front of you.
Do you think we all have a Clarence, an angel with us?
Oh, I think so. I think so. It's God. God is always watching over, and he sends his angels when needed.
I think, Mike, thanks. You have a great rest of the weekend, would you? Let's go now to Carla in Des Moines, Iowa, east of the Rockies. Welcome to Open Lines at Coast to Coast, Carla. Hi.
Hi. Am I talking with George Norrie?
Well, it depends. Where were you calling?
I'm calling from Des Moines, Iowa.
And what show did you want?
I wanted Open Lines.
How did you get this number?
I looked it up on the Coast to Coast web page.
Well, then in this case, you got him.
Excellent. Excellent.
What's new, Carla?
Get onto his show? I'm not talking with George Norrie now, am I?
No, I don't think you are. What makes you think you're not, or you are?
Well, it's hard to tell over the radio.
Didn't you already talk to somebody first?
I think you're the person who answers the phone and decides who gets to be on the air.
Well, didn't you already talk to him?
Did I?
Well, you tell me.
I don't think so.
You mean you just got right through?
No, I got you.
You didn't talk to you didn't talk to anybody else, huh?
I don't think I've talked with George Norrie.
Well, I don't
know. Tonight.
Well, you're going to have to call back to talk to him then, okay?
That's possible.
Okay. You'll have to do that. How does that happen? Let's go to Jeff in Culver City, California, west of the Rockies. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing, George? Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family and the Coast to Coast family.
And you've got the real me.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know you, George. I know you. I know your voice. Yeah, your conversation with Stuart Swerdlow regarding mind control projects, among other topics, was very interesting. But I'd like to get your views on these bright white lights that are beamed down from these various sized spacecraft that many people have been seeing or experiencing. Do you think that these beams of light, George, are capable of reading people's minds while unsuspecting individuals are asleep or in a subconscious state? And, you know, while someone is in this state, do you believe that any subconscious information retrieved with this ultra-high-tech beam is being utilized, you know, by extraterrestrials or governments?
They might have the ability to read your minds with these beams, you know, Jeff. I think you look back at the Travis Walton case where he was hit by one of these beams. And in this case, you know, he was taken up. I think it's some kind of technology, obviously, that we have no idea what it is, but I think it's more extraterrestrial than government.
More extraterrestrial than government?
Yeah, much more. Much more.
Oh, okay. Thanks, George.
All right, Jeff. Be well. Let's go next to Ross in California. Hey, Ross. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, George. This is my second time I've called you. Last year I called you around Thanksgiving and told you about my miracle where my daughter had her brain off. Cancer operation, and it was successful. But
yes,
I wanted to tell you about 36 years ago, Thanksgiving Day, me and my girlfriend and my dad were in Reno visiting my family. And in the morning, we decided to go for a drive down the main strip. And we drove down the main strip, and we couldn't find a parking spot. And I was kind of angry, and I was frustrated. So, you know, I turned around and went around and came back that same strip again. And I found a parking spot at the very end, got out of my car, and by the 5 seconds it took me to get to the sidewalk, this lady had drove down the street, a crazy lady. She was running people over and hitting them. And so when I got through the street, there was this lady laying there on the ground, and her legs were cut off from her torso.
Oh, my God.
And she was just laying there crying for her son. Every time her heart beat, she had her artery, and it was just terrible, George. And then we started looking around, and there was people laying everywhere. And it was just incredible, George. If I was 10 seconds earlier and on that street, I might have been hit myself.
Oh, my God. Well, now, was this someone who was intentionally trying to do it, or did she, pass out at the wheel or something?
Yeah, it was a lady. She said she was possessed, you know, when they finally caught her. But I think she killed at least 12 people that day.
I remember reading that.
And maimed, you know, dozens of others.
Unbelievable.
I don't know if you ever remember hearing about that.
I do remember that story now.
That was another Thanksgiving miracle that happened to me, George. Like I said, it couldn't have been more than 10 seconds if I was on that street. But
witnessed was horrible. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was extremely horrible. And I think about it every, you know, for the last 36 Thanksgivings, George, I think about that. And I thought I would just kind of get it off my chest this night. And, you know, I pray for those people, the ones who died. I pray they go to heaven. And I pray for all the ones who are injured that, you know, that they're making it through. And I think about them all the time, George.
All right, Ross, thanks for that. That's got to be a horrible sight. Absolutely. First-time caller, Kershawn in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Hi, Kershawn.
Hello. How's it going tonight?
I'm doing fine. I hope you are, too.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you.
Can you hear me okay?
I sure can. What's going on?
Okay. Yeah, I was calling because it was interesting. You guys were talking about the sun, and I had a little idea that I've wondered about ever since I was a kid.
What's that?
Because I live in this world which belongs to everybody, and it seems like we should be preserving it and, you know, doing things that are responsible. And I sometimes wonder about the idea of taking the waste, our garbage that we usually bury underneath the ground. Why don't we send it directly to the sun? And it would burn up. I don't think it would turn into space garbage, you know.
I don't think we'd be able to get we wouldn't be able to get a spacecraft close enough to the sun, Kershawn, before it would, you know, explode and melt.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And wouldn't that be the perfect idea, though, for our garbage?
Well, can you imagine how big that spaceship would have to be to haul all the refuse from this this planet?
Yeah.
Be huge. But the biggest problem is you couldn't get a rocket ship close enough to the sun without it melting and just, you know, falling apart. You couldn't get that. Of course, I'm sure the garbage would melt with it, wouldn't it? But no, I mean, can you imagine how big that would have to be? Shipping it off the planet? I'm not sure about that. Hey, this half hour already has gone by very quickly. We're going to come back in just a moment. We're going to continue with open lines tonight, this Thanksgiving night into, of course, Friday morning. And you know the deal. There's a holiday. We'll have a live show for you right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Open Lines. Listen to this bizarre story. A giant python strangled and swallowed a man, a resident of India, who fell asleep near a liquor shop. The snake could not move after the meal. The incident occurred near the state of Kerala in the southwest area of the country. The drunken man was peacefully sleeping near the shop when the python approached him, strangled him, and swallowed him whole. The next morning, local residents found the gigantic bloated python on the doorstep of the shop. People had to kill the snake to take the man's body out. Can you imagine that? You fall asleep outside of a doorway and monster snake comes and swallows you up. Yuck. Let's go to Rich in Broadheadsville, Pennsylvania. Hey, Rich, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you, George, and happy Thanksgiving to you and yours.
Yeah, you too.
And thanks for taking my call. I was just doing some research on this. You had a story, a guest, actually, a while back about the Rockstar Murders.
Yes.
What exactly was that about? I just missed it, and I'm doing some research, and I believe there wasn't there an Oliver Stone movie some years back that dove into that a little bit?
Yeah.
What was that exactly about? And I have one more other comment when we're done with this.
Okay, go with the comment first.
I was listening to the, I was out running around a little bit earlier, and I was listening to the guest about the gratitude and whatnot, and I was really interested, and I found that very interesting. And then the caller came in about the Obamacare, and it just seemed like something from another world. I just didn't get what that guy's reason was to call when it was such a great topic that you were discussing at that time. It just seemed very bizarre to me. But I'm getting back to the Oliver Stone movie and the guest. I missed it. I'm doing some research. But what can you tell me about that?
And okay. Here's something for you to search. If you go to our website, just type in Oliver Stone. He was on with us not too long ago. And you could track most of that information that he has. But it was about just some very bizarre murders of rock stars. And I can't get into the specifics of all of them because I can't even remember who they all were. But do that, and that'll give you everything you need. It's all there for you under the search engine at coasttocoastam.com. Let's go to Skip in Warren, Ohio. Skip, hey, happy Thanksgiving, hey. Skipper.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thanks.
I thought you might like to hear about a trip through time that I took.
Oh, you did? How and when?
Well, this was 52 years ago. I was only 8 years old, and I didn't use a machine. What happened was, like most kids my age, I got a train for Christmas. And this train was an H.O. Gage. It had two special cars, a rocket-firing car, and a car that exploded when the rocket hit it. And anyway, it got put away after Christmas, and that summer, I saw it under my grandfather's bench, and I asked my mother if I could set it up again, you know, and she says, yeah, go ahead, you'll be out of my hair. So I proceed to set it up, and noticed that the top of the train car that explodes is missing. That's the only part that's not there, and it doesn't work if you don't have it. Anyway, I searched the house for 2 weeks straight. It was a Saturday morning when I was going to set up the train, and I searched for the part where it was set up and in the basement where it was stored, and searched everywhere on the two floors for almost 2 weeks. My mother was going crazy. I was moving furniture. Anyway, I decided that it was gone. I couldn't find it. So I went to sleep that night. And I was going to go to the hobby shop in the morning, see if I could get another car, and, you know, I'd be able to play with the train again. I woke up in the morning. It was a sunny day. Now this is 2 weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
I walk upstairs, and because I slept in the basement, and I saw my mother as I came through the kitchen, and she was fussing with my sister, trying to get her to sit up in the high chair so that she could feed her. I said good morning and continued on through the dining room and up to the upstairs, and where I walked across the hall into the larger of the two back bedrooms. Well, George, I look into this closet, and there's two shirts laying on the floor on top of one of those flimsy boxes that you get clothes in for Christmas.
Yeah.
And I lift one of the shirts, I drop it to the side, and I lift the other shirt, and I drop it to the side, and there's the top to the train car. All right. And it's laying there, and I reach down and I pick it up. I'm more than happy to have this thing, and you know how the detail is on those train cars. I got it gripped in my hand so tight that I can feel the ridges in my hand. And I step back out of the closet, and I'm going to go scream, Mom. Now, George, I'm awake as you are right now.
All right.
And all of a sudden, everything goes blank and black, and I wake up in bed. I don't have this thing in my hand anymore, so I pop out of bed, and I thought I was awake the first time. Well, I go upstairs. As I round the corner out of the kitchen, what's my mom doing? She's fussing with my sister, trying to sit her up in a high chair.
Here we go again.
Feed her.
Yeah.
And the I continue on after I say hi to my mother like I did the first time, and she acknowledges me. I go upstairs, I stick my head in this closet, George, and there's the two shirts laying on the box top of this thing. And I reach down, I pick up the shirts, and there's the thing again. And I got it in my hand, and I'm thinking to myself, the last time you were going to scream, Mom, you woke up in bed. You want to play with the train? Keep your mouth shut. I turned to the right, went back downstairs, and sure enough, I was awake this time, but it was a literal trip through time. I thought I was awake the first time, so that's the only thing I could think of. Was I went forward in time about maybe 2 minutes.
That's a great story, Skip. And you might have had a precognitive dream, too. That's very possible, where it just seems so real, but you saw the future in your dream. Hey, as you know, we take your text questions as well. Tom's back in the Los Angeles studio, and he's got some. Before I get going, how was your Thanksgiving, Tommy?
It was very nice, thank you. But I got to say, that snake story was pretty creepy.
Only fitting on Thanksgiving.
I was going to say, I guess everybody...
Snake obviously had his meal.
Everybody has to have their meal, right? So this one is from Matt in Albuquerque, and he says, it's so great you're on live tonight. I find that the older I get, the more grateful I am for things. I wondered if that's the case with you.
Oh, there's no question about it. As I was talking earlier with Brenda Knight, it's waking up in the morning is great. You know, when you hear all these horse. I had a friend of mine, Tom. He passed away a couple days ago here in St. Louis. He mm-hmm. was probably one of the nicest, most generous guys I've ever known. His name was Bill Bruce, and he was a developer. And, you know, Bill was the kind of guy that if you were out and you were down and out for whatever reason, financially or otherwise, he'd pick up your meal. He'd pick up your drinks. One of those guys. Didn't bat an eye. And he was 73 years old, and, I'm back in St. Louis for the holidays, and a friend of mine sent me a text and says, did you hear that Bill Bruce just died? I said, what? And apparently the family found him dead in his car where, you know, I don't know what happened, a stroke, heart attack, or he had some heart issues. But I'm telling you, a wonderful guy. So, you know what I enjoy the most? Live every day like it's your last. And he did. You know, there's no question in my mind, even though he died at 73, he lived every day like it was his last. He didn't waste a day. And to me, it's a sin if you do. You know, and, you know, you don't have to do something every night.
But it begs the question, why do we have to wait to get older to really appreciate things? Like, why can't we learn when we're young?
I think youth does that to people sometimes. It's unfortunate. But I think the older you get, the more seasoned you become, and the more you begin to understand and appreciate.
I guess you just see how much more there is to be thankful for.
Yeah, absolutely. So, anyways, you had a good Thanksgiving. Did you help the underprivileged like you normally do every year?
I did, and I do, yes.
Okay, good for you. All right, I'll talk to you next hour.
You got it.
All right. Next up, we go to Catherine in Roseville, Michigan. Hey, welcome to the program, Catherine.
Hello. Thank you very much. Can you hear me okay?
I sure can.
Oh, good. Happy Thanksgiving, belated. And I wanted to ask about a guest you had on about maybe 4 or 5 nights ago, I think it is. She was the one that was a person who knows the financial stuff.
Catherine Austin Fitz.
Okay. Well, while she was on, you had a caller that called in because apparently she's kind of, is she a psychic also or something?
No, she's not psychic. She's just very good at what she does.
Okay. Well, I'm pretty sure it was that night that somebody called in about, I think it was her girlfriend's father who had called her, who worked for the government and mentioned January. I think it was the 14th and 15th or something.
There was going to be some kind of big event or something.
Yeah, was that, who was he, or, I mean, who did he work for, and what were those dates again?
The date was the 15th of January. who he works for, she didn't tell us or reveal, other than to say that something big and significant was going to happen.
Yeah, that he was concerned, too, wasn't he?
He was concerned.
But didn't he work for the government?
He worked for some facet of the government.
Oh, but she didn't say which facet.
She may have mentioned FEMA. I'm not sure.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
She may have mentioned FEMA.
FEMA. Oh, okay. And you said the 15th of January.
Yeah, that was the date. Let's hope he's wrong. Okay, Catherine.
Okay.
Thanks.
Your sound is going in.
Okay, thanks. Let's go to Wayne in Halifax, Pennsylvania. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the program.
How you doing? This is a really good program.
Well, you are very welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. I want to mention... there's a couple of stations I was watching about curing cancer. And this one doctor, he says you can get it from Germany or Sweden. And it cures all cancers. Station here, 21, they had on last week that somebody had colon cancer and had the shot, and for 10 years was no cancer.
That's
cured.
That's remarkable.
And it's mistletoe. You know, they extract it from mistletoe.
Yeah.
And then the FDA, they don't want you to have it here in the United States.
Well, the FDA does a couple things, Wayne. This is what they do. One, they make it very difficult for companies to make specific claims about anything. You cannot say it cures cancer. You can't say that. You can say it helps, build up your immune system, do whatever you want, but you can't say specifically it cures cancer. So you got to be very careful about that. There are a lot of natural ingredients out there that this planet has in abundance that I think can help you in all kinds of ways. But the biggest thing you need to be careful about is you need, if you're going to do this, if you're going to buy things, you got to do it from a reputable company. There's a company called consumerlabs.com, which they do reports on companies that really aren't on the up and up. You know, you go out and buy supplements, you don't know what you're getting, right? And a lot of times they're fillers, weeds, and stuff that just doesn't even work. You got to be able to buy that stuff from reputable companies. So that website, consumerlabs.com, will help you. They don't have an interest in any of those companies, but they have studied and researched and tested a lot of products, and they'll tell you the ones that seem to pass the muster or don't. But you really got to be careful. Let's go next to Isaac in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Isaac. Thank you for calling.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, Isaac.
Well, I was talking to my father about astral projection.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling me a story about how one time he just, all of a sudden one night he was sleeping and he didn't know what was going on. He started astral projecting and he said he went through the wall. He could see the insulation and he said it was just a magical experience. And he started doing research and he was saying he read up on these guys that they would every night just somehow they mastered it. Like they could just astral project whenever they wanted. And they would meet up, like, in their astral forms and explore the galaxy. I thought that was amazing, and I thought maybe somehow we could explore other planets and try to find extraterrestrial life.
People who astral project, Isaac, claim that they have the ability to go just about anywhere and do all kinds of things. For those of you where you think it could work for you, you've got places like the Monroe Institute and the facilities like that where they can help teach you and train you and things like that. But with astral projection, there apparently is supposed to be no limit to where you can go throughout this entire universe, maybe the multiverses. No limit at all. So, you know, definitely take advantage of that. Hey, by the way, I am going to be on a jet plane tomorrow. John B. Wells is going to be sitting in for me. We're going to have a live program for you, no doubt, and heading back toward the Los Angeles area. I'm going to be there for a week before whittling off a few more vacation days at the end of the week. What my December schedule is, I'm going to be here live on Christmas Eve and Christmas. I'm going to take a few Fridays off during the month of December, and I'm giving up a couple more weeks of vacation time that I'm not going to use, but, you know, that's the way it's got to be as we gear up for next year as well, which is truly unbelievable. So I'm going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We've still got another hour to go of Thanksgiving night open lines for you. So we'll be right back. And again, those of you who keep firing away your emails, keep doing it at george@coasttocoastam.com. You'll truly enjoy doing that as well. Let's go now to Bob, American Falls, Idaho. Squeeze you in here, Bob. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hey, Bobby, what's up?
I want to wish you happy Thanksgiving to all the crew. And this Isaac, will it, when it gets away from the sun after it slingshots around there, you got any idea where it's going to go or when it'll be visible up here in Idaho?
Well, it will keep going. There's not much to see anymore because it has, you know, split up and disintegrated. The tail, for example, is gone. So that's wiped out. It'll probably take off and keep going. It's not one of those comets that keeps coming back a certain amount of years, like Halley's Comet comes back every 76 years. This one is just going to keep going and going and going, like we do on Coast to Coast AM.